The following message is a presentation of Ligonier Ministries, home of the radio program Renewing Your Mind with R.C. Sproul.
As we have been studying the doctrine of providence, we have looked at God's government over the heavens and the earth. And in the scriptures, we are told that God's governmental providence extends to all things great and small. It extends to the rising up of nations and the pulling down of strongholds. It refers to the ordering of the entire cosmos, the heavens, the orbits of the planets, and so on. But it also refers to the most tiny, apparently insignificant details of heaven and earth. We remember that Jesus said that it is by the providence of God that the lilies spin and are clothed in the fields, that it is by the providence of God that the very hairs on our head are numbered, and that God's providence extends to the smallest detail, to the end that, as Jesus said, every time a sparrow not just falls to the ground but lands on the ground, God's eye is on that sparrow. And the sparrow's landing is incorporated within the grand theme of God's providential government. Well, we are under the rule of human governments. And as I speak today, the Supreme Court of the United States of America is in session. It's considering disputes and conflicts of matters of law. And it is their responsibility, after gathering the evidence and hearing the arguments, to render a decision on a fine point of that law. But they don't just walk into their chambers this morning and make an arbitrary assessment of a situation and from the top of their heads come to a conclusion. But there is a massive tradition of case law and of precedents and of history that goes back to Great Britain and British common law, and before that, back to Roman jurisprudence and to Greek concepts of law. But ultimately, the most important shaping structure for Western law today is found on Mount Sinai, when God delivered His law through the mediator of the Old Testament, Moses. And so even a cursory view of the history of the world reminds us that the events surrounding the Exodus of Israel, the events surrounding the giving of the law at Mount Sinai, are events that have shaped and formed and conditioned the whole future of civilization. But when we look at the origins of the story of Moses, we find a tiny detail that on the surface seems to be utterly insignificant, but under closer scrutiny and more careful examination, we discover is crucial to the whole of future history. Now, before we look at that particular detail, there's another element that I want to mention to you by way of background. Also, while courts are in session and parliaments are meeting, scientists throughout the world are busily engaged in their pursuit of examining the minutiae of the natural world. One of the most exciting developments in modern science is the movement that has been called, popularly speaking at least, chaos science. Now, chaos science is a little bit of a misnomer, because you hear the word chaos and what comes to your mind is a muddled, jumbled mess of things that has no order, no structure, no coherency. But chaos science is that movement in science that says no to chaos. It says that when things appear to us at first glance to be random or chaotic, that if we are more exact and careful in our gathering of data, in our observations, and in our experimentation, we can have breakthroughs where we will see a hidden symmetry, an order that previously had been disguised to us. One of the interesting elements of chaos science is the so-called butterfly theory. Perhaps you've read in the paper or heard on the radio something of the butterfly theory. It goes like this, that when a butterfly flaps its little wings in Norway, an infinitesimal change in the wind currents is brought to pass. I mean, how much wind is generated by the flapping of a butterfly's wing? It's almost totally imperceptible. But nevertheless, it happens. And this minute action of the butterfly in Norway changes the currents and the direction of the wind ever so slightly. But it will ultimately have an effect on the weather in the United States. So if you're frustrated with your weather forecaster's inability to be 100% accurate in their forecasts, blame it on the butterfly. Don't blame it on the poor, innocent radio person or television forecaster upon whom you're relying so heavily. It's these tiny details that, when added together and marshaled in their consequences, that bring about great events in history. Also from the chaos scientists that we learn that one of the most difficult natural phenomena to forecast with any degree of exactitude is the flow of currents of water. If you just look at a little stream, just imagine all of the different vortices that and eddies and swirls as the water moves and bumps against this rock and against that log and against the side of the bank here and there, and all of the different component motions that are taking place makes it next to impossible to predict how the current will flow with precision. I don't know what you do to amuse yourself when you're bored, but I remember having to walk to school every day and walk home from school every day as a child. And I would get bored on the trip. It was the same path that I took every day, the same route, and there was little to change the scenery. But I can remember on occasions where there had been a heavy rainfall, and the gutters along the street would be filled with water, and the water would be flowing down the hills and so on, that I would take a popsicle stick and drop it in the gutter. And I would be mesmerized as I would watch the flow of that popsicle stick to see where it would be taken as it rode the currents of the water in the gutter. This wasn't like watching an ocean liner set adrift in the Atlantic Ocean. This was just a popsicle stick in a gutter. Did you ever do that? I used to do that all the time. If I didn't have a popsicle stick, I'd drop a leaf. And the lighter the object that floated, the more it would be cast to and fro across the surface of the water, sometimes colliding with the bank, sometimes getting stuck on a twig or a branch or a rock. Well, the flow of water on one occasion in history changed the course of the world. It happened in Egypt, centuries, indeed millennia ago, when after the children of Israel had migrated south and settled in the land of Goshen and were treated as royal guests of Joseph. When Joseph died and time passed, a Pharaoh came to power who no longer remembered Joseph. And as time passed, and the Jewish people began to proliferate and grow larger and larger, they had been enslaved by the Egyptian Pharaoh and forced in their labor to make bricks for the store cities of Pithos and Ramesses. But this Pharaoh who came to power became nervous because this slave group was getting bigger and bigger and stronger and stronger. He had more male workers than he needed to meet the quotas for building, and he was afraid of an insurrection, and he had every reason to fear an insurrection. And so he decided to reduce
the size of this slave force and issued a decree that every male child born among the Israelites would be executed. He allowed the female girls, the babies, to live. But the male babies had to be put to death. And so we read in the scriptures, in verse 22 of chapter 1, that then Pharaoh commanded all of his people, saying, "Every son who is born, you are to cast into the Nile, and every daughter you are to keep alive." Then chapter 2 of Exodus begins like this. "Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived, and she bore a son. And when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months." Now those of you who are mothers, who have borne children of your own, know the unspeakable joy of looking into the face and into the eyes of your baby for the first time. And I can't conceive of anything more terrifying to a young mother than to have some official walk into the room and say, "Give me your baby so that I can execute it." Mothers will sacrifice their own lives to protect their young. And this Jewish mother was no different. She was not about to volunteer the news of the birth of her son to the agents, to the police force of Pharaoh. She was not about to go down the street and deliver him to the troops and have them drown her baby in the river. She loved her son and saw that he was fair and saw that he was beautiful and radiant. And so for 3 months, she lived in terror. She hid her son. When her son would cry at night, she would have to muffle the sounds of this baby, lest someone would overhear the crying and report her to the authorities. She feared every moment a knock at the door, the entrance of the troops, much like Jewish people feared during the nightmare of the Holocaust in World War II, that the Gestapo would come in the middle of the night and take away their children and put them into labor camps or concentration camps. The same fear was known in the villages of Russia during the murders of Stalin in the Ukraine. But in the ancient world, this peasant woman was able to hide her baby for 3 months from the Inquisition of Pharaoh. But as each day passed and the child grew stronger and older, the task of hiding him became all the more difficult. And rather than having her fears assuaged, they were intensified. And she was in a quandary. How can I continue to protect my son? And verse 3 of chapter 2 of Exodus tells us her solution. "But when she could hide him no longer, she got him a wicker basket and covered it over with tar and pitch. Then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile." She built a vessel of flotation for her son. A vessel that would protect him from the elements, that would protect him from sinking into the water and drowning. Her care extended to covering the seams of the basket with tar and with pitch, lest this little basket would spring a leak and it would sink. In other words, friends, she did everything in her power, everything that she could do to exercise her providence over her son. She did everything that was humanly possible to provide a future for her baby. And she realized that if she kept her baby at home, there would be no future for him. For it would be inevitable that he would be discovered and consequently executed. And there was no person that she knew to whom she could send the baby and entrust the survival and the future of her son to them. She had only one place to turn, and that was to the providence of God. And so doing everything humanly possible to secure the life of her baby, she tenderly placed her child in this basket and set it adrift amongst the reeds of the Nile River, exposing her baby's future not to fortune, not to fate, not to the blind currents of the river, but she consigned her child to the care and to the providence of God. Because this peasant woman understood that the currents of the Nile were in the hands of the one who made the Nile in the first place. She gave up her child into the providential care of God. The child's older sister, we read, stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. Interesting statement, isn't it? Tells us so much about the older sister. This was not just idle curiosity. You know how an older sister treats a baby brother. It's commonplace in the family that the older daughter begins to experience a kind of pre-motherhood when she is given the responsibility to watch over her little brother. I see it in my own house where my grandchildren live, where the eldest is a girl, and she's the one who babysits the two little boys. She's almost their mother. So this older sister, presumably, whose name was Miriam, watched from a distance. She couldn't get too close. She would give away the secret of the concealment of her brother. But she couldn't stay so far removed to not have any idea of the outcome of this drama. She stood at a distance and watched the flotation of this reed basket as it went down the currents of the Nile. And she watched at a distance. Why? To see what would happen. She was watching for the future outcome. She wanted to see what providence would do. But what happened? Verse 5 says, "Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile with her maidens walking alongside the Nile, and she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid, and she brought it to her. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying." Was it by chance that it was at that moment that the daughter of Pharaoh himself went to the riverside to bathe? And her eye caught upon this strange object moving on the currents, and she walked over to investigate, and she saw this basket. And in her curiosity, she lifted it up out of the water. She opened the basket, and to her utter astonishment, there was a 3-month-old baby crying. And her womanly instincts took over immediately. She stooped down and she picked up this baby and placed it upon her own chest. And we read in verse 6, "And she had pity on him." Now suddenly the decree to execute the infants was not an abstract thing, not hidden by the secret chambers of the womb, wherein 40 million infants have been slaughtered in America. But she saw a real living baby and had compassion. You know the rest of the story. The daughter of Pharaoh took this child for her own, brought him into the royal court, saw to it that he was educated and trained as a prince. And she gave him the name Moses because she had drawn him out of the water. But it was not the hand of the princess that saved Moses. It was the invisible hand of providence. We've been looking at God's providential government of all things great and small in the universe. How that God keeps the planets in their orbits and cares for these beasts of the field and the birds of the air. But again, we mentioned in passing our Lord's teaching that the very hairs of your head are numbered. We may feel small and insignificant in this vast cosmos in which we live. But even with its vastness, and where we sense a feeling of remoteness and the very absence of God, not only is God alert and vigilant and alive, but He knows every detail about our lives. And He is sovereignly preserving our lives down to the last and to the smallest detail. He knows every hair that's on my head. And when I take a comb and comb my hair, every time I comb my hair and stand before the mirror and wet my hair and take a comb through it, I look down at that comb and there are strands of hair that are snarled and caught up there in the teeth of the comb. I've lost some more hair. God knows it. He keeps count. And He knows every detail and every concern that is yours in this world.
For more information about Ligonier Ministries, call 1-800-435-4343 or contact us on the web at ligonier.org. That's ligonier.org. Or write P.O. Box 54, 7500, Orlando, Florida, 32854.